This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We are just jumping the gun, preaching that the country needs to return to democratic system of governance. That the internal processes, domestic issues need to be understood by the ECOWAS. They need to deal with the domestic issues and look at the significance of the citizens.
That's David Agbi, director of the Ghana Institute of Governance and Security, on why the international community should be patient as Mali's military junta works on a transition back to civilian rule. Details coming up also regarding the 737 MAX airplane. A House panel has concluded that Boeing failed in its design and development, and the Federal Aviation Administration failed in its oversight. And an internationally respected medical scientist says COVID-19 has infected many more people in South Africa than the official figures say. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Leaders of West African states and Mali's military junta failed to agree on a transfer to civilian rule in talks Tuesday, raising concerns about the political standoff and regional security in that country. Security experts in Ghana, where the talks took place, say the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, needs to help Mali return to normalcy as it is in a dire situation. Stacey Knott reports from Accra.
Ghana's president and ECOWAS chairman, Nana Akufo-Addo, told reporters after the meeting they have not reached any agreement with the military junta. The regional bloc wanted the military leaders to immediately hand over power to a civilian government. The bloc had imposed economic sanctions after the coup and given a Tuesday deadline for the junta to appoint a new president. There are fears the coup could undermine the fight in Mali and the Sahel region against Islamist militants with links to Al-Qaeda and Islamic State. Speaking before the talks began, Akufo-Addo said the situation requires Mali to resolve its political crisis immediately.
The terrorists are taking advantage of the situation in Mali to flex their muscles even more. Today is supposed to be the day when the military junta in Mali is to put in place a government which should respond to the criteria we set out at our last summit of 28th August 2020. That has not been.
David Agbi, executive director of the Ghana Institute of Governance and Security, said many factors at play in Mali need to be considered, including ethnic tensions, poverty, and the influence of France in the country. He said the deadline ECOWAS had given the junta would not work.
We are just jumping the gun, preaching that the country needs to return to democratic system of governance. That the internal processes, domestic issues need to be understood by the ECOWAS. They need to deal with the domestic issues and look at the significance of the citizens.
He said in these circumstances, citizens generally do not respect civilian rule. He said better outcomes could be achieved by helping the military bring back stability and then hand over power to civilians while building up democratic structures. If this situation is not handled sensitively, Agbi said there will be dire consequences for the stability of the Sahel region. Vladimir Antri Danso, the Dean of Academic Affairs at the Ghana Armed Forces Command and Staff College, shared similar sentiments. Antri Danso said he wants to see a more mature approach to help Mali transition to democracy and for ECOWAS to play a key role with mediation.
We need to have a transition to that normalcy, but to stampede the junta, to hand over quickly. The junta has not gotten a charter. They wanted them 18 months. Transition. Fine. I'm not saying that is best. But we needed to help to bring about a kind of understanding between the opposition and the junta.
ECOWAS leaders said they would be willing to allow a transitional government to stand for 18 months, longer than the original year it asked for. They also said they will fully accompany Mali towards the restoration of constitutional order and lift sanctions once the country has a president and prime minister in place for the transitional period. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
After an 18-month investigation, a U.S. House of Representatives panel has concluded that two Boeing 737 MAX airplane crashes that killed all aboard were the horrific culmination of failures by the plane makers and the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA. The 737 MAX was grounded in March 2019 after the crash of Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302 near Addis Ababa, which killed all 157 passengers and crew. In October 2018, a Lion Air 737 MAX had crashed in Indonesia, killing all 189 on board. The panel report states that Boeing failed in its design and development of the MAX, and the FAA failed in its oversight of Boeing and its certification of the aircraft. The report criticizes Boeing for withholding critical information from the FAA, its customers, and pilots of the plane. Lawmakers are proposing numerous reforms to restructure how the FAA oversees aircraft certification. Boeing said it learned many hard lessons from the accidents and the mistakes it has made. An internationally respected medical scientist says COVID-19 has infected many more people in South Africa than the official figures say. The country has been the most severely affected on the continent by the pandemic. According to the latest government statistics, more than 650,000 people in South Africa have had COVID-19, and the death toll is approaching 16,000, Darren Taylor reports.
Virologist Professor Shabir Madi says the official numbers of infections are based on tests that have happened in tiny pockets of South Africa.
In terms of who has been tested, more than 50% of the individuals that have been tested as COVID positive are tests that have been done in the private sector. And we know that the private sector does not take care of 50% of our population.
The government says the private healthcare system serves only 16% of the population. Mardi adds that about half of all in South Africa who've tested positive for coronavirus were asymptomatic. As such, the government hasn't counted them as infections.
In addition to which, probably the majority of people, especially those making use of the public sector, that were mildly symptomatic simply didn't actually get tested.
His contentions are supported by international disease statistic groups like the Institute for Health Metrics, or IHME.
When we were reporting 14,000 cases each day, the IHME model estimated there were 80,000 new cases each day in South Africa.
So Mardi's convinced COVID-19 has already infected 20 million of South Africa's population of 60 million.
We haven't seen that translate to huge amount of deaths from COVID-19, huge amount of hospitalizations, overwhelming of our healthcare facilities. That simply didn't really transpire to the extent that most modelers predicted it would.
The presidential advisor on the pandemic says there are several possible reasons why South Africa's death rate is so low, given its massive numbers of infections.
The one that I favor as an example is a possibility that there was some sort of underpinning immunity that was present in South Africans, possibly because of previous exposure to common cold coronaviruses. And we know that exposure to those common cold coronaviruses, based on studies that have recently been reported from Europe, from the United States, does induce some level of cross-protective immunity against SARS-CoV-2.
Others have suggested that a young population has insulated the nation against the numbers of deaths seen elsewhere, but Mardi doesn't think this holds.
That is sort of offset by the higher prevalence of tuberculosis, by the higher prevalence of diabetes, hypertension, obesity in South Africa compared to Northern Hemisphere countries.
The scientist says another reason for the comparatively few deaths could be that most citizens have been wearing masks.
even though the mask might not be 100% protective against becoming infected, it might actually reduce the inoculum load. So the amount of virus that the person becomes infected with is lessened by people wearing masks.
Mardi says the lower death rate than projected should not encourage people to stop practicing safety measures such as washing hands.
Once these non-pharmaceutical interventions start falling away, people become more complacent about it, what would happen is that that percentage of infection that already has taken place would not be adequate for herd immunity. So there's sort of a balance that we need to strike in terms of how we move forward. It would be way premature to say go back to life as normal because we've reached herd immunity. We haven't reached
herd immunity. Herd immunity is a form of indirect protection from disease. It happens when enough of a population has become immune to an infection that it cuts the chance of those who aren't immune becoming infected. For now, says Mardi, South Africa's holding firm against COVID-19. But he remains concerned that this will change when the government relaxes lockdown restrictions further. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The ancient art of traditional African storytelling has found an unlikely ally during the COVID-19 pandemic. Because of lockdowns, the Play Africa's Children's Museum in South Africa has put its African storytelling project online, broadening the audience to children around the world. Maurice de Klerk has the story from Johannesburg.
She knocked. Professional storyteller Thembile Tsuma has taken traditional African storytelling onto cyberspace. He was supposed to entertain youngsters on location at the Play Africa Children's Museum in Johannesburg, but the pandemic lockdown changed all that. Now Tsuma is performing online through a camera and computer screen. His global exposure has been growing, Tsuma explains via Zoom.
Now I am more than like 3,000 people following me on my page, of which is actually the same thing that's also happening to other storytellers and to the Play Africa page.
Internet savvy mum Pamela Seluani from Soweto explains on a Zoom call why she initiated viewing sessions in a local bookshop.
Some kids don't have the opportunity to actually watch even on their phones. They don't have access. So I'm like, why can't I let other kids watch with me? It was from an excitement of discovering this, and I just wanted to make it go viral.
It was a steep learning curve for the storytellers, the Children's Museum and its partner organization, ASIDESH SA, the South African branch of the International Association of Theatre for Children and Young People, to master the technology and adapt techniques and props to bring interactive African storytelling to Facebook Live. However, their efforts have transmitted African story magic far beyond South Africa, despite the COVID-19 lockdown, says Anne Simmons of the Play Africa Children's Museum via Zoom.
That ancient art form is now putting a human and a human together again via some zippy technology. We started seeing people from Kenya and elsewhere in Africa connecting. We often see in Europe, in the UK, families logging on. We've had families from Australia.
Despite clear benefits, online African storytelling must be dealt with carefully going forward, says applied theatre practitioner and analyst Lalu Mokuku through Zoom.
It may also exclude many people that may not have access to a digital space. That's why I said there needs to be care. At the same time, it's also quite important for our stories to be told widely.
Play Africa Children's Museum and ASIDESH SA are working on developing complementary educational content and considering ways for wider use of the stories. Marise de Klerk for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Nigerians are protesting a hike in electricity and fuel costs in the middle of the economic hardships from the COVID-19 pandemic, but authorities maintain the new rates are in the best interests of Nigerians. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Angry protesters this month marched the gates of Nigeria's Electricity Regulatory Commission in Abuja. The protesters are demanding an immediate reversal of a government increase in electricity and fuel costs. Authorities nearly doubled the cost of power per kilowatt and removed a fuel subsidy, causing a jump in the price of gasoline. Sydney Usman is the Abuja head of Revolution Now, the group that led the protests.
It is anti-human, it is undemocratic, it is anti-people, and it's only aimed at subjecting the Nigerian people to more severe hardship. Not at this point in time where we're just recovering from the pandemic, where livelihoods are lost, jobs are lost, businesses are grounded. How do you survive?
Millions of Nigerian businesses and shops rely on energy from electricity or petrol to operate. The COVID-19 pandemic's impact on the economy has already hurt many traders. Amina Aminu runs a bottled water company in Kwali on the outskirts of Abuja. She says the tariff increase will only add to production costs and further squeeze her profits.
All the capital we inject, it will go back to diesel and petrol. So there's not any profit. Because normally we have to transport the pure water. The bottled water is transportation. So we use diesel, we use petrol. And we use petrol and diesel to power our generator to produce.
Many Nigerians accuse authorities of being insensitive to the economic hardships caused by the coronavirus. But officials argue the rise in power and fuel costs will help ensure more reliable electricity and fuel supplies in Nigeria, despite market fluctuations. Odion Omonfoman is an energy consultant with the Aiteo Group, a Nigerian energy conglomerate. He says the pandemic's impact on tax revenue has forced the higher cost for power and petrol, also known as premium motor spirit, PMS.
Crude oil prices, our main earner, has been quite low. So the Nigerian government is simply struggling for revenues to balance its budget and therefore cannot afford subsidies on PMS. So it's a step in the right direction, in my view. It's unfortunately a necessary pain that we have to take.
Nigeria has spent around $22 billion in the last decade on fuel subsidies. Power authorities also generate electricity at a much higher cost than what is passed to consumers. But protesters say with the ongoing pandemic, they will not back down in their demand for a return to the prior level of government support. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
A U.S. court has given the government a green light to end humanitarian protections for about 300,000 immigrants from Sudan, Nicaragua, Haiti, and El Salvador. Monday's ruling by the Ninth Circuit Appeals Court affects individuals from the four nations who received Temporary Protective Status, TPS, extending their ability to remain in the United States. Many have lived a significant portion of their lives in America and have U.S.-born children. The ruling means that most immigrants will be required to find another way to remain in the United States legally or depart. They include about 450 Sudanese who became eligible for relief due to the country's protracted arms conflict. TPS covers people from nations where there is ongoing armed conflict, a natural disaster, or other extraordinary conditions, and allows them to live and work temporarily in the United States without the threat of deportation. It is intended to last until their nations of origin can safely take them back. Cameroon has deployed military troops to stop opposition supporters from protesting against long-serving President Paul Biya. Political opposition and rights groups blame Biya, who has been in power for 38 years, for rights violations and a four-year separatist conflict. Cameroon authorities have vowed to arrest anyone who tries to demonstrate against the government, as Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from Yaoundé.
Opposition supporters say at least 12 of their members have been detained since Friday by what appear to be Cameroonian military troops. 27-year-old Christophe Nkemche says 8 motorcycle taxi drivers in the city of Douala were detained and have not been seen since. He says armed men dressed in Cameroon military uniforms whisked off 8 of his colleagues to an unknown location. Nkemche says the 8 men were arrested while reading newspapers and publications from opposition political parties. Cameroon's opposition leaders say the detentions appear amid a thwarting protest against the country's first regional elections and President Paul Biya. Biya in late August announced the elections will take place December 6. Cameroon Renaissance Movement MRC leader Maurice Kamto vowed to disrupt the polls and called for protests. Kamto, who says Biya stole from him the 2018 presidential election, says Cameroon should first resolve its four-year separatist conflict.
Our fight against the dictatorship of the regime in power is heading towards its critical phase. Despite the essentially peaceful nature of our struggle for the freedom and development of our country, the regime once again resort to terror and judicial barbarism. As I have said repeatedly, we want to get out of the dictatorship.
Authorities have not confirmed or denied any military detentions of opposition supporters, but Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji confirmed that troops were deployed and instructed to arrest any protesters.
I want to sound a stern warning to unscrupulous politicians looking for cheap popularity with a hidden agenda that they will face the law. In case of any public disorder, administrative authorities have been instructed to take necessary measures to maintain law and order.
Nji would not say how many troops were deployed, but opposition supporters and locals say the security presence is noticeable in major cities. Cameroon's government has banned public gatherings of opposition political party members in most cities and towns. Nonetheless, Kamto this month has been meeting with supporters as part of what he calls plans to force Biya from power. Moki Edwin Kinzaka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyus Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.